Hi, diddly ho, neighborinos, and welcome into the week 5 edition of Sunday Best. I'm your host, Jay Felicio, and if it's your first time listening, thank you for being here. Appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to me talk about a game. This show's designed to be a quick, high-value reaction to the games from Sunday. We skip the filler and go right into the detail on some of the biggest fantasy storylines on the day. Then I'll run through a rapid-fire round of quick hitters before wrapping up by touching on any critical injuries of the week. Now, pitter-patter, let's get at her. Carson Wentz gave us exactly what we would expect from him. A typical mix of periodic clutch plays with overthrows and bad decisions that just make you want to clutch your pearls. Wentz finished with 25 completions on 34 attempts and 236 yards with one touchdown. The good news is that the Vikings go on bye, and J.J. McCarthy is expected to return after the bye. Wentz heads back to the bench in a backup role, but he's shown that he's a good enough insurance policy. If McCarthy continues to struggle, Wentz can step in and run the offense without cratering the value of the Vikings' fantasy assets. Jordan Mason remains the lead back, though his performance was a bit of a frustrating grind. 13 carries for 52 yards and a touchdown, and the drama came on 2nd and 10 when he tried to spin out of a tackle and the Browns' Alex Wright punched the ball out. After the lost fumble, we saw a lot of Xavier Scott and CJ Ham, which gave us a scare that Mason was being benched for the fumble. But Mason wound up playing a season-high 71% of snaps, including nearly 90% of snaps in the second half after the fumble scare. Obviously, don't love the fumble, but Mason's usage confirms his job security, and he looked as explosive as ever. He's a high upside, too, because the Vikings trust him. He's explosive. He's efficient. He just needs to hold on to the ball. The receivers for the Vikings are pretty easy. Justin Jefferson's an auto start, period. Justin Jefferson is an auto start, period. He hauled in 7 receptions for 123 yards on 8 targets, maintaining his elite wide receiver 1 status. The secondary drama for the Vikings came from Jordan Addison. He wound up being benched for the first quarter due to disciplinary reasons, but he still tied for the 2nd most targets and caught the game-winning touchdown. On the flip side, TJ Hockenson has seen the volume, 6 targets and 6 catches, but wound up with just 38 yards. Hockenson's a volatile tight end whose touchdowns are really doing all the heavy lifting. Focus on Jefferson and Addison, who is a back-end wide receiver too, with some potential for big spike weeks. Browns rookie Dylan Gabriel made his first NFL start, and he handled the London matchup rather well. Finished with 19 completions for 190 yards, threw 2 touchdowns, and crucially, he didn't throw any interceptions. He stuck to the short game, got the tight ends involved, and really did everything needed to keep the Browns in the game. You're not looking to start him in any format, even 2QB or Superflex, but he played well, but he's just not going to deliver that elite fantasy output that you want. He did show enough poise to earn another start, and that stability could be good news for the tight ends. Quinshon Judkins is completely taking over in Cleveland, rushing 23 times for 110 yards, his first career 100-yard game. Judkins dominated the backfield with 79% of the Browns' rushing attempts and is averaging over 20 carries per game since week 3. His day could have been even bigger. He rushed for a 56-yard touchdown, but got called back due to a holding penalty. He did break off a couple of long runs, 2 for 14 yards and another for 32. He's not doing a whole lot through the air, but Judkins is locked in as a high-end RB2, low-end RB1. He's the definition of a workhorse and must be started every week. David Njoku led the way for the pass catchers, finishing with 6 receptions for 67 yards and a touchdown on 9 targets. Rookie Isaiah Bond was right behind him with 7, although he converted for just 2 catches and 29 yards. And Harold Fannin caught 4 passes for 13 yards and the only other touchdown. The target share is clearly consolidated around the tight ends and the short area of the field. Njoku's a borderline tight end 1 and seems to be the primary target for Dylan. The issue is Jerry Jeudy, who saw 5 targets but only managed 15 yards and scored fewer than 10 points for the 4th straight game. He's unstartable until further notice. Late in the game, after an offensive pass interference call nearly killed the drive, Knicks made incredible back-to-back plays that would wind up putting up the Broncos for good. He tossed a 3rd down dime to Cortland Sutton to extend the drive, followed by a touchdown to Ingram, who had to do the space jam reach for the goal line. He made clutch 3rd down throws that made him look like a seasoned vet. Knicks is a borderline QB1 that you start more often than not, but just know every Sunday is going to be a dice roll. He's the fantasy football version of Lloyd Christmas. just when you think the play he makes couldn't be any dumber, he makes another one that totally redeems himself. Well, the RJ Harvey breakout lasted all of 1 week. Following his 19.8 fantasy points in week four, he managed a disappointing 6 points against the Eagles. J.K. Dobbins, however, maintained his stranglehold on the backfield with a season-high 20 carries for 79 yards and a touchdown. Dobbins is dominating the workload, and Harvey's not a threat to his lead back status at this time. Dobbins is locked in as an RB2 with a rock-solid floor, scoring his fourth touchdown in 5 games. Harvey's nothing more than a handcuff for now, total 4 carries for 12 yards and 3 catches. Start Dobbins with confidence, stash Harvey. Courtland Sutton proved that his week 2 1-point dud was a fluke, scoring over 17 points for the fourth time in 5 games. He dominated targets once again with 10, converting 8 for 99 yards, once again making a couple of just absolutely incredible highlight catches. Evan Engram caught 4 passes for 33 yards and a touchdown, his first as a Bronco, and Marvin Mims and Troy Franklin had quiet days, combining for 5 catches of 45 yards. With the inconsistent play of Bo Nix, Sutton's the only reliable target here. Franklin and Mims are flash-in-the-pan boom-bust plays who have had their days, but their combined performance against the Eagles really left much to be desired. Well, the Eagles succumbed to the complaints of A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith after averaging over 32 rushing attempts per game in their 4-0 undefeated start to the season. Jalen Hurts had a season high in pass attempts, completions, passing yards, and threw 2 touchdowns, but he just rushed the ball 2 times for 3 yards, his fewest rush attempts since 2022. Poetically, this game ended with a Hail Mary attempt where both Brown and Smith were fighting for the same ball. Brown was directly behind Smith, looked like he was trying to moss him. They basically played defense on each other and the ball fell to the ground, costing the catch and the game. Hurts quarterback one status is safe, but the Eagles' offense just looks broken. Admittedly, Saquon Barkley hasn't looked like the RB1 overall that we saw last year, but he'd still had at least 18 carries in each of the Eagles' first 4 wins. The problem is the run-heavy script disappeared this week. He had just 5 carries and 1 target heading into halftime. And this wasn't a game script issue. This came despite the Eagles being up 17-3 going into the fourth quarter. The team simply pivoted away from the run. Barkley's day was saved by a 58-yard touchdown catch on a wheel route that he took to the house on the opening drive of the second half. Saquon may not be putting up huge numbers, but he scored at 17 points in 4 of his first 5 games and remains a borderline RB1. Well, I hope their extra involvement in the offense was worth it. The Eagles force-fed their disgruntled receivers. Devonta Smith had a big game, 8 catches on 10 targets for 114 yards. However, A.J. Brown was once again quiet despite the high volume, 5 catches on 8 targets for 43 yards. Dallas Goedert scored his 4th touchdown in 3 games, but caught only 3 passes on 9 targets for 19 yards. Smith was the main beneficiary of the passing shift, but still remains a middling wide receiver too. A.J. Brown needs to turn that volume into efficiency quickly. You can't view him anything more than a wide receiver too until he does so. Dallas Goedert has scored double-digit points in every game this season, but his receiving touchdowns are completely unsustainable with a low yardage total, so proceed with caution. Jaden Daniels returned from injury, and it was a bit of a slow start. He looked rusty and uncomfortable, and I gotta say, I was a bit concerned with the way that he was moving around. That lasted until about the second quarter. Then the real Jaden Daniels showed up and showed out, finishing with 15 completions on 26 attempts, 231 yards and a touchdown. After a late drive was extended by a roughing the kicker penalty, he hit Luke McCaffrey with a 50-yard bomb. And to clinch the game with 1 minute left, he hit Deebo Samuel for the touchdown while facing an all-out blitz. I was concerned with the start, but Daniels proved once again he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league and an elite fantasy option. He remains a weekly must-start in all formats. Bill Kroski-Merritt exploded for a huge day. 14 carries, 111 yards, 2 touchdowns, adding 2 catches for 39 yards. He had a fantastic run where he spun out of a tackle by Derwin James for a huge gain. But honestly, the Chargers defense was so bad and their play calling was laughable. His 2 touchdowns were more about the terrible defense and nothing he really did. You can call me a hater, but I don't see what others see in him. Yes, he's got some explosiveness and some speed, but I'm going to go back and watch every run from this game, and I'm going to look at some from the other games as well. Yes, he had a monster day for fantasy, but the right move is to capitalize on the hype and sell high. Mitigate the risk because the Commanders are clearly committed to this multi-back rotation. That 48% of snaps really concerns me. Deebo Samuel continued his bounce-back campaign with 8 receptions and 96 yards on 11 targets, scoring the game-sealing touchdown with a minute left. He was the only Commanders receiver to receive more than 2 targets and is currently wide receiver 11 on the season. While Deebo dominated, Luke McCaffrey provided a little bit of boom on a little bit of volume. 2 targets, 1 reception for 50 yards. Even when Terry McLaurin comes back, Deebo Samuel is the wide receiver 1 for fantasy on this team. It was a second straight game of over 20 points. His versatility and volume make him locked in as an every week start, and I expect the Commanders to continue to lean on him pretty heavily. Justin Herbert looked phenomenal early. For the first quarter and a half, this offense was unstoppable, building up a 10-0 lead, but the tide turned on a fumble loss by Quentin Johnston, and the Chargers offense really never recovered. The rest of the game was defined by the pressure put on by the Commanders. The offensive line was a constant game of musical chairs. Wound up playing 3 different players at right guard during this game. The Commanders totaled 5 sacks, and Herbie faced a ton of pressure all day. In his attempt to come back, he had 2 long completions, 1 to Quentin Johnson, 1 to Keenan Allen, that were called back by penalty due to this inconsistency on the offensive line. The frustration culminated in a tip pass interception on the goal line. Herbert was fine when he had time, but with the shambles the Chargers O-line is in, the pressure is going to continue. You have to lower Herbert's floor a little bit, but he still remains a borderline QB1. Amarian Hampton struggled with efficiency this week, 12 carries, 44 yards, averaging 4 less than yards per carry. But while the ground game stalled, his receiving volume was elite, catching all 6 of his targets for 26 yards. But the major story was the injury bug striking again. Hampton left the game in the fourth quarter with an ankle injury and was seen leaving the stadium in a walking boot. We're recording this on Sunday night, so the severity is unknown, but that's a bad sign. Rumors had a high ankle sprain, and if that's the case, likely to miss a couple of games, similar to what we're seeing from CeeDee Lamb. When Hampton left the game, the work was split between Kamani Vidal and Hassan Haskins. This is a pretty dire situation, especially after losing Najee Harris. I'm not interested in either Vidal or Haskins. Neither offers a ceiling or floor that's worthy of a roster spot. Keenan Allen once again led the Chargers in targets, converting 9 targets into 5 receptions for 58 yards. Ladd McConkey finally got into the end zone. 7 targets, catching 5 passes for 39 yards, and a tutty. Quentin Johnston had a quiet day, seeing only 4 targets, but he caught all 4 of them for 40 yards. But the problem is he lost a key fumble that was a turning point for the game. All 3 receivers were involved, proving this offense can sustain 3 options, but means they're all going to eat into each other's workload. They all fall somewhere in the wide receiver 2 spectrum on a weekly basis. Season-long, Quentin Johnston still has the highest upside, and honestly, I considered he was flirting with wide receiver 1 status coming into the game. Keenan Allen's a high-floor PPR option, and yes, McConkey got his first touchdown in 2025, but until somebody separates, you've got to accept that they're a 3-headed committee that caps the ceiling of all 3. Now we'll leapfrog around the league for some quick hits. George Pickens made it. George Pickens made Cowboys history in week 5, delivering 2 catches on 4 targets for 57 yards, including a spectacular 43-yard touchdown reception where he burned Sauce Gardner. That's his 5th touchdown catch, which is the most in Cowboys history for a player in his first 5 games in Dallas. The low volume doesn't matter when he's scoring every week. He's a certified baller and locked in as an every week start. The Giants may have found their new touchdown machine in Theo Johnson. He posted 6 catches on 7 targets for just 33 yards, but delivered 2 touchdowns and scored in his 2nd straight game. He's caught all 3 of Jackson Dart's career passing touchdowns. Jake Ferguson is cementing his must-start status. He was peppered with 9 targets, catching 7 passes for 49 yards and 2 touchdowns. His 2nd straight game with a score. Ferguson has been a target vacuum and a certified must-start tight end every single week. The volume crisis for King Henry continues. He was bottled up, gaining just 33 yards on 15 carries, 2.2 yards per carry. He did score a touchdown, but that wasn't until the score was 34-3 with 3 minutes left in the 3rd quarter. He's now scored fewer than 10 points in 3 of 5 games. Henry is a risky start even when Lamar Jackson returns. You can't rely on his high floor. Now, we've seen before with King Henry that he's had a few down games and came back roaring, so don't drop him, don't give up, but there's definitely concern that this could finally be the end. Darren Waller continued his renaissance. He caught all five of his targets for 78 yards and a touchdown, scoring for the second straight week. What was encouraging is he had nice long catches over the middle on the Dolphins' first two drives. With Tyreek Hill out, Waller has emerged as a clear second option for Tua behind Jalen Waddle. Waller's went from sitting on the couch making terrible music videos to a must-start tight end in all formats. Bryce Young did lead the Panthers to a comeback win, but the stat line's pretty rough. 19 completions on 30 attempts for 198 yards, two touchdowns, an interception, and a fumble lost. The harsh reality is he's only got one game over 200 passing yards this season. He remains a shaky fantasy option who could find himself back on the bench, this time for good. Well, the Woody Marks hype train has stalled at least for 1 week. After what looked like a backfield takeover last week, Marks was entirely outtouched and outproduced by Nick Chubb. Marks is likely the long-term answer, but you can't trust him as a weekly starter until we see consistent usage. He's a stash for now. The insane, nonsensical, maddening usage of Kenneth Walker is real. He had 10 carries for 86 yards, an elite 8.6 yards per carry, but somehow only saw one more rushing attempt than Zach Charbonnet, who had 9 carries, 36 yards. If you have one eye, you can see who the better runner is in the Seahawks backfield. But they're committed to this 50-50 split for some reason. Walker's an explosive runner, but Charbonnet caps the ceiling by taking the uber-valuable red zone work. If Walker could ever get 65-70% of the touches, he'd easily be a weekly RB1. But until then, Charbonnet's involvement in goal line work frustratingly limits Walker's high-end fantasy potential and really grinds my gears. There aren't as many injuries to talk about this week, thankfully, but there is a pretty big one. I touched on it already, Omarion Hampton. Left the game with an ankle injury and didn't return, and he wound up leaving the stadium in a walking boot. If he were to miss time, Kamani Vidal and Hassan Haskins likely split the work, but honestly, I'm not interested in either one of those guys. Giants wide receiver Darius Slayton left the game against New Orleans late with a hamstring injury and did not return. If Slayton misses time, Jalin Hyatt would likely become the Giants' attempt at a deep threat. And that's a wrap for Sunday Best Week 5 Edition. Just want to say thank you again to each and every one of you who took your time to listen. I'll be back next week for the Week 6 edition. Same bat time, same bat channel. And most importantly, don't forget, choose love, not hate.